Hey there, everybody. I want to warn you that this week we get into a pretty heavy topic. If you have noticed from the title, it's about the Me Too movement. I wanted to hear from somebody who has experienced a Me Too story, because when the movement was at its height, I felt like nearly every woman and some men in my orbit had a tale. I reached out to this week's guest, Nat Rich, entirely because I didn't know her. I didn't want to ask a friend to try to be vulnerable in retelling their tale. I actually wasn't really sure how I'd handle that, if I'm honest. Nat was a stranger before the taping, and her openness and vulnerability in telling the tale didn't actually make that much easier. But it did allow us to candidly discuss this topic, and for me to ask the tough questions that I had. Hey Nat, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, how have you been these past few months?
I've actually been all right. I've got a great creative project that I'm working on, and I'm quite chilled. I'm up at my parents' house in Yorkshire, so it's very nice and cozy up here, and the fridge is always full, and I don't have to do my own cleaning, so I can't really say that I've got anything to worry about at the moment.
That sounds incredibly lovely.
And it is.
Very jealous, given the fact that I had to do all of my laundry from a two-week trip yesterday.
Oh,
and that was exhausting. I have a lot of questions, and the topic of today's episode is going to be quite heavy. So just before that, could you tell everybody a bit about yourself? What do you do, and a bit about your history?
Yeah, I am a personal responsibility coach. That is someone who helps you take personal responsibility for the things that you've been avoiding in your life. So that looks at areas where you're not stepping up, really, where you're not adulting properly. And I make it quite fun. So it's discipline, but with lots of colors and lots of fun and, you know, great to-do lists, but in a really organized way. And I'm also the founder of a radio station called I Am Sound. So we have a wellness and dance music radio station, and it focuses on sound as a healer, as well as a modality to be, you know, reduce stress. And we also feature quite a lot of the big Ibiza DJs, global dance DJs on there. And a lot of the conversations I have around the radio shows are talkwards, which are awkward talks around things that matter. So it's a very apt subject title, I guess, for you as well today with the talkwards. We're having a talkward.
Absolutely. We are having a talkward today.
Yeah.
So for the context of people who are listening, Nat, when I reached out to you, it was basically like a cold call. Had an idea I wanted to talk to somebody about. You were very, very kind in being responsive on that. And the topic I want to discuss is intense in nature. I will be very appropriate as we get along here. For the history of it, you know, a few years ago we had the Harvey Weinstein allegations. Mm-hmm. They were suddenly part of our everyday news cycle, though apparently they had been quite rampant for a while. And then the hashtag MeToo started trending, and everybody started saying, well, I've been in this situation before as well. It seemed nearly every woman in my orbit had some story, you know, famous following on Twitter or just a friend of mine in general. We also heard the stories of very famous, you know, men and women included, but I don't think it struck generally how pervasive that whole experience is, just how many people have, unfortunately, some kind of story. So with that, my question to you, do you have a Me Too story?
Yes, unfortunately, I have more than one. I think it's more appropriate to say we too, because I don't really know anybody that hasn't got something that they can talk about in a way. The Me Too movement for me, when it first happened, I actually did have social media back then, and I remember putting out what had happened to me, and I didn't want to put everything. I only put a slither of what had gone, you know, I'd gone through in my life. And even that slither got some, you know, some serious conversations happening with people from my past and also people from my present. And the first kind of Me Too scenario, I guess, that I could talk about is when I was much, much younger and I had quite an abusive relationship. And that was physically, emotionally, and sexually abusive in many ways. And I didn't know any different. And I only knew of my mom and dad's relationship. And that was like a team building, bonding exercise, which, you know, looks amazing. And they were always together and always partnering and doing things. I didn't know how I got it so wrong. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know that I was going to get it so bad. But my choices were driven a lot by alcohol and drugs back then as well. So, you know, there's two roles in a relationship. There's them and then there's you. And both of you have a responsibility to create that relationship. And both of us broke down. And it was extremely violent, which in turn got me to respond in a violent way to survive. And it was very tough. And there was, you know, forced sex scenarios. There was bullying. There was, you know, beating. And a lot of it was something I didn't know how to handle. Everything I didn't know how to handle. I didn't really know who to talk to at that time either because I was very young. And I'd never experienced that amount of abuse. But it was, you know, it's part of my story and my journey, but it doesn't take away the severity of it.
When you interacted with your people, the friends in your orbit and everything, were mm-hmm. they aware of this?
A couple of them knew how controlling he was. Most of my friends at the time actually just left me to get on with it because they didn't agree. But they had their own scenarios. And one of my friends, I was gutted that I lost them at the time for a period because they didn't like my partner so much. And they didn't want to see me if I was with him, which hurt me. But I understood why. My parents didn't know. I couldn't explain because they always wanted me to, you know, I somehow chose a boyfriend that got sent to prison as well. So they didn't approve entirely of him anyway. So I didn't want them to hate him anymore because I thought they're just going to have a go at me and tell me to not be with him. So I moved out and I moved into his. And yeah, it was a very tough and strange time. But I was, you know, I was in a particular environment and I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I didn't know if I did share it with anyone, they were just going to hate him. And I didn't hate him. I loved him in some weird way. So I didn't want to tell anyone what was going on because they would just not want me to be with him.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily part of your relationship.
Mm.
While you were walking through the story and some of the details, what were the emotions that you were just feeling? Did you cycle through past anger, shame? Are you in the acceptance phase?
Completely in acceptance for what happened and my role in it and his role in it. I don't have any shame around it because I've talked about it enough to be able to find comfort in it in a weird way. And anger, I felt angry for a very long time. But true forgiveness and true acceptance, the anger dissolves if you allow the space for it to dissolve. If you don't, then it won't. And you'll carry that rent-free in your head and your body and also the shame. And I didn't want to do that. I needed to get out of that cycle and move past it.
I'm guessing immediately after all of this, when perhaps the relationship ended, you started to take a look back a little bit. Did you feel as if this was all very obvious at that point, in the hindsight is 2020, or did it take you some time to realize that, hey, I've been through quite the ordeal?
I knew I was going through something that was quite not normal, shall we say. It was normal in a lot of situations that I saw from where I'm from in this area, but I knew there was something fundamentally wrong with it. I didn't know how bad until I got a bit older and I started to tell people what I'd been through. And I realized that even though they had their own stories, most of them weren't as severe as mine. And that made me go, oh, I've actually been through it. So I really did have to sit with how severe it was because it brought it back to the large scale. And I mean, there was so much abuse and ownership and control and patterns that were played out that were so obvious looking back, but I just wasn't aware. And I genuinely did love him and I wanted it to get better or to change. And I didn't have any boundaries back then. I had no, but I didn't even know what a boundary was of, like, you know, what's a hard limit? What's a no? What are you not going to go back from? There was so much. I allowed cheating and everything. I just didn't know what a good relationship was. So every area was challenged, unfortunately.
You kind of answered this question for me, but I guess I'm going to ask it very directly. The constant criticism that somebody who doesn't agree with the Me Too situation is that you should have known better. And you should have walked away. It's not a fault of the person. It's a fault of your own and your own upbringing and stuff. So generally speaking, like, why didn't you just decide one day, like, this is terrible, I'm walking away?
Yeah. So should have, would have, could have. We can all change things in the past. There's no set rule for every single person on the planet. If there was, it'd be a lot calmer than it is right now. is something that... I had a beautiful upbringing with my parents in the sense of they were loving and kind. There was a little bit of friction between me and my mum, but other than that, you know, I was very fortunate. And I came from a really good home. So most people would say, well, why? You know, why did you go through this? And I don't know all of the reasons why. I just know that I was meant to go through it for greater growth. And I've helped so many people who have also gone through this situation or similar or worse later on in life. But you don't know always when you're so young what your limits are because you haven't grown into them yet. So they are going to be tested and your boundaries are not going to be in place. You're growing. You don't know everything when you're 16, 17, 18. You think you do, but you don't. And if it happens to a friend, you're like, hell no, that's wrong. But your emotions are in the way. And when you love someone and they love you and they, you know, you don't realize it's codependent. You didn't even know what codependent was, especially back then. Now, I think it's easier with younger people because they are much more aware of emotions and feelings and speaking about them because they're a little bit more, as you know, a lot of people say woke, but they're a little bit more in tune with their personal development and what's right and wrong because it's so obvious. But back then, we're talking, you know, I always say I'm 26 plus tax or like 26 for life. You know, I was growing up in a time before a phone, before the internet, before self-help books were a thing. That information wasn't available to me. So I'd love to have found out that information, but it just didn't pass me by. So should I have seen it? Where was it? That's my answer to that.
On the topic of age, how old were you during this relationship?
We dated when I was 16 when I met him, and we dated until I was just 19.
That's a pretty formative time of your life. Did that affect the future relationships pretty aggressively?
Hell yeah. I took that little bundle of trauma into other relationships. Yeah. And, you know, I would love to say that once I got out of one, things were great, but I got into another. When I moved away, I moved to London, I got into a very, it wasn't always physically abusive. There was one time he tried to strangle me when we were having sex in a car, which was extremely, that was a hard limit. I was like, no, I can't do this. But he'd switched. He didn't know that he wasn't planning to do it. It just, there was this anger that came over him and he took it out on me and it was very scary. And, you know, I was with him. I would go out raving with my friends. I'd go out clubbing to all the different clubs in London. And this guy would just turn up on his own and stand in the corner and wait for me to finish. And he would just follow me everywhere. And he was so controlling and manipulative. And he was also in a lot of pain. But at the time, again, I don't know what male trauma is at this age in my life. I don't know what's going on. He's just, you know, I'm just thinking he's a bit of a dick. But I didn't want to be on my own. And I couldn't break away from it. So I was making the same habits, not as physically abusive, but definitely emotionally abusive. I wasn't, you know, I tried to finish with this guy so many times. I'm so efficient now. Back then, efficient wasn't even anywhere near me. It was just ridiculous what I went through. And it was, again, drugs and alcohol infused. Not everybody knows how to control themselves and handle themselves on drugs and alcohol, and they miss the blinding obvious sometimes. And I'm responsible for the amount of drugs and alcohol I take. Nobody else is responsible for that unless I've been spiked, which I have been, but not by him. I was getting wasted. And if I didn't want to be on my own, I'd go home with him.
There's a lot of questions that I have on all the stuff that you've just mentioned that we could probably take another full conversation on.
go for it.
About these gentlemen who've been in your life. I use the word just out of politeness because I don't know them and I don't want to speak too ill. But I'm curious, do you have any contact with any of them? Do you ever still talk?
I have spoken to them both since the events. I have no hate or anger for either one of them at all. And I've worked on that. There was a lot that I needed to work on. But I got through it. And if I saw either of them, one of them more so than the other, I'd be very happy to see, because we ended it on it was hard when we ended it, very hard. He threatened to kill me and it was we have to completely separate. I can't see this guy again. And he tried to follow me and it was quite bad. Then I saw him a few years later and the dust had settled and he'd explained in a card to me what he was going through. He'd sent me a card and I understand. So, you know, there was a forgiveness there because there was an apology there and there was a real genuine connection again of what we started. And I had to go through that forgiveness process. I haven't seen the other guy for many, many years. I've heard where he is and what he's doing. I don't have social media. I'm not in touch with him. If I saw him again, I'd say hello and I'd ask how he is. And that would be it. I don't really feel there's any need to, you know, to have them as best friends, but I certainly don't hate them and I wouldn't want anything bad to happen to them. If it does, it does, but I wouldn't want that for them.
Can I ask, when all this was done, what did your process look like to find yourself in a healed perspective? When you were immediately out of it, there's the hurt of a relationship ending, there's the loss of love, there's all these other things. And inevitably in those years that pass, you have that acceptance. But what does that look like? I imagine that's a really difficult time for anybody to go through.
It is very hard. There's an element of when you're working on yourself and you're trying to heal yourself and you know there's a process. Most people don't know they have to go through this process until they're in it and they're like, oh my God, you know, I've got stuff to work on. I knew I was taking myself into a process because I was waking up spiritually, and I knew that in order to grow and to become a better version of myself, there were some things I needed to let go of. So by letting go of those emotions and letting go of those feelings, you know, you have to face them. You can't just push away and, you know, put them under the great rug, which is, you know, the big carpet that everyone sweeps stuff under. That great rug is just like flopped in 2020, and everyone's stuff's come out and everyone's dealing with their stuff. But I did that process. I did my emotional clearing out, and I still continue to do so. A long time ago, all of my stuff came up when I decided to stop taking drugs, and then I started drinking more. And then I decided to stop drinking. And then I realized when I wasn't drinking and I wasn't going out in the same ways that I was, there's all the emotions that you've blocked your whole life just come up. You can't stop them coming up. They will come up, but you need to give them space and grace to be able to deal with them. And that was hard. There was deep, deep, deep work, crying on levels that I didn't know I could cry, to the point, you know, and I say this now and I look back and I smile about it, but whenever something happens to you, regardless of what it is, the worst thing that you go through is you cry harder than you did before. That's the maximum you go through, is an uncontrollable pain, but you cry that pain out. And I said to myself, you know, I'm crying, but it's just tears. It's just water. I can't be scared of water anymore. So I need to allow myself to cry. And when I gave myself permission to allow the water and the tears to come, you know, the emotions engulfed me, but I knew there was a beginning and an end to these emotions, and I just let them rip. And I, you know, I stayed in my room. I was at my mum and dad's house back then. I had a breakdown, and it was dark because everything I'd covered up and plastered over and been like, I'm fine, you know, and you're not fine. And, you know, all the times when you say, I'm okay, all of that, I was not okay. I was flawed. I was an absolute vulnerable mess. And I was trying to reconnect with parts of myself that I'd completely disowned. And I had really gone deeper than I even knew humans could go. So I knew that there was more to go at. You know, I couldn't just dip in and be like, oh, I'm done. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in. Like, I need to go all the way down here. And there was deep meditation and just closing my eyes and just allowing what needed to come to come. That would bring back thoughts and, you know, memories and scenarios and conversations that scared me, but I knew was just a thought. But the body still had a reaction as if I was still in those emotions. So there was a whole reliving process to go through, but on your own, without the physical threat of someone there, but to understand your role in it as well. I think this is very important for a lot of people to be aware of, is that it does take two to tango, always. And I'm not saying anyone is, you know, it's okay to do anything to anyone because the other person's got a role to play. What I'm saying is, the only way I know how to heal is when you take responsibility for your own bullshit. And that's the bullshit that you will tell yourself when you tell everybody that it's their fault and it's that person's problem and he was this and they were that. You're constantly pushing the finger outside, when actually there's a lot of stuff that you need to look at, and why you allowed it, and where, you know, what were you doing in that time, and how did you perpetuate that? Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you ask for help? Why didn't you report what was happening? All of those things were because I didn't know how to, but there's a part that you still have to take ownership for that. You still have to take ownership for the lack of awareness that you have and the lack of information that you have. And you still have to take ownership for the fact that you were there as a human being with a conscience most of the time. You know, you do know right from wrong, and you made a decision and you fucked up. And you have to take responsibility for that, because otherwise you're always going to blame someone else for it. And you can't really forgive and learn to grow when you're still blaming the other person. We do that because it's easier. We do that because we want to say, oh, it's that person's fault. And very recently, I went through a tiny amount of rejection, but I'll tell you very quickly. It was, you know, I'd spent an amazing time with someone. It was a really nice evening, and we'd connected very well sexually. And then in the morning, it was like a disconnection. It was very like abrupt, and I didn't really know why. And I afterwards, it was, you know, he'd pulled away for whatever reason, and I had to sit with the rejection of it. Now, part of my ego would want to say, oh, he's a dick, you know, fine, next, move on, or, you know, it's all his problem. And the other part of my ego would say, oh, no, I'm better than that, it's fine. Another one bites the dust, but I'm okay. You know, like constantly just moving out of the actual fact that I've been rejected and sitting with the fact that this guy just doesn't want you and you've been open and vulnerable and raw and he doesn't want you. And that's okay. I can't name him something because it makes me feel better. I can't pretend that it didn't happen and that I'm going to move on and I'm fine when I'm not. I had to sit there with that rejection and go, this is it. You know, this is the fact that somebody doesn't love you and want you and want to spend time with you. They don't even want to talk to you. That feels awful. You feel like the kid that's not been picked in the playground. Nobody can get out of that feeling. But there's a responsibility. I could sweep that under the great rug and go, oh, it's fine, he's a dick, and move on and slag him off for the rest of the time. But that's not actually going to help me. So me just owning that rejection in that moment, it was like 2 days of feeling shit, basically. And I'm like, okay, you know, this doesn't feel great, but you write about it and you can sit with yourself in the mirror and look at yourself and really go through that. And I know there's nothing fundamentally wrong with me because I've worked on myself, but it doesn't make me not question that. You know, I think, what? Why? Why doesn't that person want me? Because they don't. And that's okay. So it's very, there's a deep process to just accept and not blame or shame or get angry at the other person. Because then that way you can handle it. Otherwise, you can't handle something you keep giving away.
I find it interesting because the word blame is oftentimes thrown around as either blaming somebody or blaming yourself. I find that as you've explained this to me more, that the idea of blame is actually just incorrect altogether. No one should be blamed, really. It's acceptance and it's awareness of yourself. And as soon as you decide you're blaming somebody else, it's almost like relinquishing all of that. And rather than it being something that you're pushing off, it's actually incredibly powerful to yourself to be able to have that.
Yeah, because when you're blaming someone, you're not willing to take the shame of the situation that you've been in. There's a block. And I'm not saying, you know, I've been raped and I've been through that situation, unfortunately, more than once. And it does bring a tear to my eye when I think about it because it was a traumatic time. It's not because I haven't processed it, because I haven't dealt with it, because I have. But it doesn't change that, you know, that feeling. And I can't say that, you know, every single type of rape out there is, you know, is excusable in any way, because it's not. It's fundamentally not right to do that to someone, to take, you know, to do that process and to go through that process. But the only thing you have is your power. You feel like your power has been taken away from you constantly. So it's very hard to feel like you've got any power at all to be able to get yourself out of that situation. So I can see why it's difficult for people to do. The only power we really have is to choose what we do in that moment, to choose the reaction that we have. If we are willing to sit with how that truly feels and we're willing to work on all of our stuff that's in that, and only our stuff, because you can't heal the other person. You can't change the other person. You can't make it any different. You can just only do what your side needs to be done. And that's a full process. And if you're willing and you have the power within yourself to be able to understand what the other person has gone through and why they've just done that to you, I'm not saying you need to open your house up and say, hey, come in and live with me. But most people, you know, hurt people hurt people. Most people do things to other people because they've got a lack of awareness or they've gone through something so hard they can't hold on to it themselves. They have to externalize it in some way. And it can be gross and it can be hard and it can be so devastating for other people on the other side. But we, you know, being a victim of someone else's violence is awful. But you have a power to look at what your situation is and choose how you want to respond to that. And you can stay a victim. Or you can understand it and you can grow and you can forgive and you can forgive yourself and you can move past it because it's possible and I've done it. And a lot of people don't know that journey and it's very hard for that journey. And there might be a part of that story that they don't want to own because they feel shame. So they blame. And that's not for every story. And I'm not generalizing here. I'm saying from my own experience, I was so embarrassed that I'd repeatedly gone into a connection that was violently and devastatingly damaging for me as a young woman. But I did. And I took cocaine and I was taking ecstasy pills and I was drinking and I was going back into those environments. You know, I knew those drugs were wrong because everyone knew drugs was wrong. But I didn't know that that was going to always happen. And when it did, it would frighten me the same time as it did the first. But being forced and manipulated into something, it does break down your own willpower. You're not an idiot. You have just been manipulated sometimes in a masterful way. Narcissists and general, you know, a lot of rapists out there are narcissists. They are very intelligent and charming. They are manipulative and they are clever and they know what they do. Manipulators and narcissists are there in life and they can seem like the most happiest, charming people. So you can fall in love with them one minute and then the next minute you can be kicked to the curb by them. And that is an emotional trauma that is very hard to try and find your balance in because you want the love and then you get rejected and then you need the love again and then you get rejected and then you think you need more love and you want to heal them as well sometimes. You want to change them because women love to do that. We're like, oh yeah, I can change this person. You can't, but there's this deep need for our own self-love. So while we're looking at this other person for it and we're not looking at our own self-love, we allow them to do things that are fundamentally fucked up. It's hard. It's very hard. But, you know, you can get through this. And you just have to be willing to let it go. And if you've created an identity out of your story, then that's even harder to let go because you might be quite happy playing the smaller version of yourself and having this story around you rather than stepping out, letting go of the story and becoming someone else that you don't even know who exists. You don't even know who that version of you is. That version of you could be more frightening than holding onto a story of your past trauma. And we're here to be empowered. We're here to be inspiring and to be inspired. We're here to grow to our fullest potential. And we do have to let go of the story in order to go into this new unknown world. And that's a beautiful process. It's like, you know, the whole butterfly process. But it's a tough one. And not everyone is willing to expand into their greatest self because they don't know who that is. So it's easier to stay with a story that may not benefit you and may feel like crap every day. But it's something that you're used to. And your new story is one that you're not used to. So it's a time and a place. And everybody's got their own way of healing. I've unfortunately had to go through certain things for myself and it's not easy. And I, you know, I commend anyone that wants to work on themselves, but once you start, you can't stop because those feelings that, you know, things will happen to push you to keep going into healing because healing is your greatest self. And if you're willing to do that and that there's so many amazing people out there that can help you, then great. If you're not, you know, there's nothing anyone can do. You're just going to have to take the time with it.
Nat, thank you so much. I know this was a long and kind of interesting deep dive of your history, and I'm very happy you decided to share all of this stuff, like your story with kind of a pseudo stranger that connected on the internet that way. So I'm very thankful for your time and for the insight.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been really nice. And, I always think that I get what I need and it comes to me. I'm open. And this showed up and I thought, yeah, I feel comfortable to talk about this and I feel confident to do that because I've worked on it. And there would have been a time when you asked me and I'd have been like, hell no, I trust that whatever I do is protected. I feel, you know, I have faith in God and I'm thinking my path is a certain way and, you know, I've just got to be willing to talk about it. And you gave me the opportunity to do so. So I thank you for that. And I really commend what you're doing. It's great.
I honestly can't begin to thank Nat enough for taking the time to speak with me, a total stranger, on this really intense topic and her history. In the full version of this conversation, we covered a myriad of other topics, from her coaching of men who have been aggressors to cancel culture and more. I wanted to keep the episode specific to her, though, and I think that what I learned was incredibly valuable. That said, I won't give my own advice here, as I'm an outsider who's looking into this horrible Me Too world, so I'll just echo her sentiment. In the end, with all major traumas that we have, acceptance is really the first step towards healing. If that means crying, anger, pain, frustration, and more, so be it. But ignoring those signs would only really do us a disservice. That's it for today's story. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, you can subscribe to get the latest updates anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment and you're feeling generous, please leave a review.
I'd really appreciate it, and it helps me understand how to make this show even better. For more info on me and this concept, you can visit our website at onesimplequestion.co. One Simple Question is hosted by me, Abhishek Lahoti. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you tune in again soon, and bye for now.